thought the movie was pretty good. I saw that as a teenager or something. That came out in the 80s, didn't it?
No, it came out in this millennium.
Oh, did it?
But
well, you know what I'm thinking of? I saw a film called The Keep as a teenager. The Keep.
Right, that's not Stephen King, but it's interesting, of course.
It did seem like an interesting film. It was, I don't remember it very well, but I remember it being, shall we say, surreal, mystical?
Salem's Lot is the vampire one, which is actually pretty good. Some of them are good, and the novel, or the novelette that The Mist is based on is also quite good. But the movie is a tour de force. A lot of people refuse to watch it, though, because of its uncompromising ending, which offends them.
Oh, I'm sorry to hear that.
Yeah, I think they should watch it. Not turn up their nose at it, but they do.
Well, I don't know what's so offensive. I'm not familiar with the film.
Well, it would be a spoiler alert to tell you.
Well, let's
not. One thing that's interesting.
Let's not spoil anything. Boy, there's something going on in the makeout room right now. Is that
always
active?
There's always a lot of noise coming through, and it gets on our soundtrack, but what can we do?
Well, it gives the sound as though you were, you know, amidst a very popular nightclub, which I suppose you are, really. You're just next door to it.
There's yes, but I'm not directing that particular music. And
well, it's directed at you. This fanfare is actually fanfare for you, I think.
I wish it were so, but no, I am irrelevant to it. This wall is not insulated.
Yeah, I think they should just do away with the wall. I think that
I have a glass sheet so they can look into
the
radio.
That would be good as well.
Well, I don't know. Maybe someday they'll have something like that.
Yeah, a glass sheet, a kind of permeable membrane.
Well, we were talking about the Festival of the Demons. And
oh, we were.
Wonderful.
Well, but then we got on to more important subjects.
Well, I'm glad you got to encounter that festival and see those amazing sights.
Well, I did. Yes, it's a really a good time to go to Bali.
This particular time, you mean?
In March.
Oh, and yes. Having nothing to do with the political floundering of America during this time.
Well, that doesn't seem to have a much effect on Bali, except that pretty much every Balinese person that you meet says that they think the war between Iran and America is really awful and stupid.
Well, of course it is. It's illegitimate.
Yeah, it's illegitimate, and it's just ill.
It's not according to our principles, and it's all because the insane Republicans are allowed to do what they want. They control all branches of the government. If we can get it back, I think it'll be a while before that will happen again.
Well, all right. So, back to the subject of Bali.
Yes.
Why don't you ask me a question about it? I mean, I don't really know what to say.
Well, I'll ask you this. Is there an open spectacle, a parade?
Yes.
And does it start at a certain day and end on another day, or is it all on one day?
So, okay. There's a holiday called Nyepi in Bali.
How would you spell that in English?
N-Y-E-P-I. Nyepi.
Okay.
Nyepi is the Hindu New Year. And you'll have to forgive me, but I haven't actually checked what the relationship between Nyepi and Bali is and what it is in Hinduism in India, for example. But it is the most important holiday of all in Bali. And Bali has so many holidays, it's just incredible that anybody gets anything done.
That sounds very sane and reasonable to me. What does the holiday of Nyepi celebrate?
It is the Hindu New Year, so it celebrates the beginning of the Hindu calendar, and it takes place on a new moon in March. So it's typically right around the spring equinox. And it was on March 19th this year, which happened to be my birthday as well.
Cool.
And so Nyepi in Bali is a day of silence. You're supposed to stay quiet and stay in your room. You're not supposed to go outside. Mm-hmm. You're supposed to stay in your house, you know, and don't use electricity. Mm-hmm. Just keep everything on a very...
All very virtuous.
Yeah, right. So, but the night before Nyepi is what's called Pangarupakan. And so Pangarupakan is when the demons come out. And the demons take the shape of these giant paper mache or otherwise crafted demon statues.
They looked very well made. They
well,
did
they
not
are.
Appear to be amateurishly constructed in any way.
Typically, the Ogo Ogo, which are the demon statues, are made by the teenage boys and young men of a village or neighborhood by the association known as the Banjar. So the Banjar of
the
a
Banjar.
Specific neighborhood or village will construct one of these demon statues, and usually there's a lead artist who directs it, maybe a team of skilled artists, and then there are many, many assistants and helpers who are less skilled, but less skilled in Balinese terms is probably a great deal more skilled than...
You're saying they're still pretty damn skilled.
It looks that way to me, yeah. It doesn't look like anybody was... let's say it doesn't look like there are too many false moves on these statues. They're well put together.
They did seem so in those pictures that you sent to me.
Right. No, they're gorgeous, and it's too bad that the listeners are only listening and they're not viewing.
Well, they can look it up.
They
you
can.
You gave them the name of this
well,
festival.
Ogo Ogo, which is spelled O-G-O-H-O-G-O-H. And I've got a brief video that I shot myself of Ogo Ogo in Denpasar. So if they can somehow locate my YouTube, they can look at that video.
In the meantime, they shall have to be guided by your description as you were in that country and your familiarity.
Well, so the Ogo Ogo, they parade through the streets of Bali on Pangarupakan, the night preceding Nyepi. And the greatest concentration of Ogo Ogo is in the heart of Denpasar. And the Ogo Ogo parade to a crossroads at the Lapangan Puputan, which is the field. Lapangan means field, and Puputan means ritual suicide or ritual sacrifice.
Yikes.
Well, this is a historic location in Bali where the royal family of Badung Regency commit ritual suicide in front of the Dutch rather than succumbing to colonial rule. That took place in 1908, I believe. And so the field there...
And that was not enacted, but an actual suicide.
These were the kings and princes and other aristocrats of the royal family of Badung. So you see, the Balinese have something like 8 kingdoms, actually. And before Dutch colonial rule, these different kingdoms kind of vied for power on the island. Badung is the kingdom which was in Denpasar, and I suppose it still is. I mean, they've been deposed politically, these kingdoms, but the bloodline still exists. So there still is a king of Badung, a king of Gianyar, a king of Buleleng, a king of Plungkung, and I could go on listing the names of Balinese kingdoms. But get back to the Ogo Ogo. They all parade to this historic site in Bali. Not all of them, because there are many Ogo Ogo parades all over Bali. There must be thousands of these Ogo Ogo that are made across the island. So the more populous areas like Denpasar, Kuta, Sanur, Ubud, Gianyar, Singaraja, they have more major celebrations, naturally. But even smaller and remote villages also have their parades of demons. Well, at the main location, which is also the government seat of Provinsi Bali, because Bali is its own state within Indonesia. A lot of people think that Bali is its own country or something.
Was it affected by the giant typhoon which was recently there?
I'm not sure what you're referring to.
Oh, all right.
Yeah, I mean, there were a lot of floods in Bali last year. I mean, there's typically a lot of rain throughout Indonesia and flooding in different parts of Indonesia, as well as volcanic eruptions and earthquakes are not uncommon occurrences throughout the islands. I mean, basically the entire Indonesian archipelago is a chain of volcanoes.
Yes.
Right.
Rob, would you like to get on the mic and the headphones and so on? Well, it would be nice to have you here.
Well, that was good that you hung up that phone. Don't trip. Don't fall.
That phone, I think, is
yeah, don't
is
trip.
Worthless. No one can call on that phone.
But I keep trying to get around to the point of this crossroads where
yes.
So on the Pangarupakan in Denpasar, which is at the government seat of Bali, at this historic location of the Lapangan Puputan, the Puputan field, the field of ritual sacrifice historically, there's a statue of a Balinese god named as Chaturmukha. Chaturmukha has four faces looking in the cardinal directions.
Wow.
Right. And so in this roundabout, it's kind of roundabout around this beautiful statue, Chaturmukha, all of the demons come parading in from all four cardinal directions, and then they go round and round the roundabout.
How many would be there at that time?
Several hundred. Yeah, and some of these things are easily 20 feet tall. Maybe taller, and it takes for them to be supported on their bamboo platforms. It will take 50 or 100 men carrying the statue on a bamboo platform.
They are massive, then.
They're very large, and they have steel armatures around which the papier-mâché or fiberglass, I'm not sure if they use fiberglass. It seems they're using some sort of other material that I'm not clear on what it is, but some kind of sculptural skinning material that's not papier-mâché but is more professional. I mean, Ogo-Ogo can cost tens of thousands of dollars to produce. Or maybe more. I don't really know. And this is, you know, in the Indonesian economy, which is at a much lower scale. I mean, the Indonesian rupiah, for example, a million rupiah is $60 U.S. And a million rupiah will buy you as many as 50 reasonable dinners. Those would be inexpensive dinners in Bali at 20,000 rupiah, but still, you can get a decent dinner.
Would that be like some rice and vegetables or something?
Well, that might be like nasi campur. You could have nasi campur, which is mixed rice. Nasi means rice, campur means mixed. And so it would be vegetables. It might be some a little bit of chicken and maybe egg
and some.
It is delicious, yeah. And that's one of my stable go-to meals is nasi campur while I'm in Indonesia. So you get a little bit of everything, and you go into a restaurant and you can choose from behind the glass, and there's all the different foods, and they pile it onto the plate. And anyway, but I digress. Where you were talking about demon statues, not about food.
Right, but it's all part of the whole experience. So.
Well, the demons kind of ceremonially battle against each other, and the demons are represented to absorb the negative energy from the island of Bali. And so the parades have this purpose of attracting the evil spirits, and the demons consume them or somehow magnetize them or conglomerate them. Or
they somehow pull the evil out.
Yeah. It has a pulling effect. It has a purifying effect, these demon statue parades. And it's quite vigorous. I mean, you even as a spectator, you work hard at during a Ogo Ogo parade. Or at least I did, because I was handling a camera on a stabilizer.
Were you expected to do anything of a ceremonial nature as one who attended?
Well, I was doing the ceremonial boule performance, which is handling the camera. Boule means white man in Balinese, and that is the tourist sort of sacred instrument, is the camera.
So if you take a picture of anything, that marks you as a tourist?
Not really. A lot of Indonesians and Balinese are taking their own photos. And with the advent of cell phones, more of them are taking cell phone video than ever.
So you have to be a conspicuous tourist with a camera to be a bule.
Well, I mean, if you're a bule, it means you have white skin.
Ah, well.
Yeah. But nothing wrong with being a bule in Indonesia, at least not for decent Indonesians. It's just like calling somebody black or Mexican or whatever. Mm-hmm. It just refers to their race. It's not It's not intrinsically derogatory. It's just what is. So, but as a foreigner, you're curious about the culture, and perhaps you're wielding a camera so that you can snap dynamic demon statue photos. Or as I was doing, I was shooting video using a DJI Ronin RS5 camera stabilizer, a gimbal. And that kind of
giving you a Steadicam type.
Yeah, it's like a Steadicam. Yeah, Steadicam is sort of the original gimbal, going back to, well, the Stephen King movie, The Shining.
Yes, there was a famous use of that.
Yeah, that was one of the very first uses of the Steadicam, and the operator, I forget his name right now, was also the inventor of the Steadicam. So Kubrick procured the inventor of the Steadicam to use his invention to get those POV shots going down the hallways of, what was the name of the hotel?
The Overlook Hotel.
The Overlook Hotel. Ah, that's a nice name for a hotel, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You know, I'm working on this Sherlock Holmes poem right now.
Really?
Well, I am. I'm working on a poem about Sherlock Holmes. And the reason for the Sherlock Holmes poem is that I have to rhyme the word party. And party doesn't rhyme with much. It rhymes with Dr. Moriarty. That's about it.
What about Artie?
Well, that's not very... That doesn't lead to much poetry, rhyming party and Artie. It leads to farty.
Billy Barty?
I don't know who Billy Barty is.
A famous midget who appeared in Gold Diggers of 1933.
Oh, that's a lovely film.
Yes.
Yes. I like the Ruby Keeler segment in there that goes, meow, meow, don't you get your love in. Come on.
Remember, there's a scene, they do the petting in the park number, and it starts to rain, and so all the girls run behind a big screen and start to undress, and then Billy Barty, wearing a rain slicker, comes and starts pulling up the screen, giving you the impression that you're going to see the girls in their natural state. But by the time it gets up, they have changed, although there is a period where you can clearly see that they've got nothing on just by the shadows in the Busby Berkeley way. He also appears as a baby in a baby buggy shooting a cop with a pea shooter and other antics.
I seem to recall that, but I'm thinking of a specific clip with Ruby Keeler, and maybe that is... What's his name? Buddy Barty?
Billy Barty.
Oh, Billy Barty. Okay, so maybe it is Billy Barty who is dressed in a cat suit with an enormous tail, and they sing the song, "Come out, come out, come out and get your love in." Mm-hmm. And how's it go?
I think that is in Footlight Parade.
I think it's Gold Diggers of 33.
Really?
Yes.
All right. Well,
but you know, it's in a Busby Berkeley film.
They have the cat number that they practice in.
Yeah, where they have all the women in the little cat suits.
Right.
Yeah. Is that Footlight Parade?
I believe so.
Oh, well, it's got, and that stars Ruby Keeler.
Yes, but so do they all. She's in Gold Diggers of 1933, and in Dames, there's this incredible number where there are all these Ruby Keeler heads floating around.
Oh, yes.
You remember that?
I think I do, yeah. Well, Busby Berkeley was a genius of legs, I've heard that said.
I just love those things. When we do Relodio, K-Rob projects movies that we're looking at silently. So we've looked at some Busby Berkeley that way while we talk.
Well, you know, there's also, we were buzzing about Bali before we started Buzz being Berkeley.
Yes.
And
I don't know why I mentioned Billy Barty, but
well, because it rhymes with Moriarty.
Oh yes. All right. Well, then
well, who is more evil, Dr. Moriarty or Billy Barty?
Well, Billy Barty is just another Hollywood performer.
Yeah. Well, why is Dr. Moriarty so evil?
Well, that's his mind runs that way, but he was a mathematics professor. He has great scientific achievement and so forth.
I see. The problem I'm having in the poem now is that I think I want to... Well, you know, I don't want to talk about the poem. I don't want to get into that.
Well,
let's not talk about it.
You can talk about it.
No, I don't think we should talk about it. I think we should talk about more sanitary subjects.
Well, of course, there's also warty.
That's what?
Warty. If someone is covered with warts, then that person is warty.
Well, that doesn't rhyme with party.
It doesn't?
No. It rhymes with porky.
Porky? No, no.
I said porty.
Yes.
Not porky.
Warty has a T. Why?
I know. But arty. Arty, party, farty.
Mm-hmm.
What else?
Well.
Repartee.
I suppose you could always consult the old rhyming dictionary, but I'm sure you're going to do fine without that or without anything.
Yeah, I don't know. I am working on the poem. It starts out something like, I don't know. I have to read. I'm not very good at memorizing these things, but Sherlock Holmes, a man disguised as Sherlock Holmes, you see.
Mm-hmm.
Is spying on a party, and the
it's not Sherlock himself disguised spying.
Well, that's ambiguous. Spy. Whether it is Sherlock Holmes disguised as Sherlock Holmes.
Well, that would be playing four-dimensional chess when it wasn't necessary. I think.
I don't know. It seems like it would be an unnecessary step
as
to
an
disguise
old sailor or something. But
yeah,
not
typically
as
he disguises himself as something else. There's the scene where he goes into the opium den and he's disguised as some sort of, I think he's disguised himself as a drug addict. He's an opium addict. And he's gone into the opium den where he's looking for a missing person that's thought to be hiding or wasting themselves away in the opium den. Paregoric.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Well, that wouldn't be. They wouldn't use that. They'd be smoking the raw opium that you get from the exterior of the bulb of the poppy plant.
Well, where does the paregoric come from?
Well, it's a medicinal preparation that the pharmacist would be able to answer more than I. I'm just saying.
What's
they
the difference between laudanum and paregoric?
Well, laudanum is a direct derivative of opium. It was used by Coleridge, for example.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah.
Ah. So Holmes is spying on this party.
Mm-hmm.
And the...
Which rhymes with Moriarty.
Which rhymes with Moriarty. And I think I'll just try to... Here. This will probably be the best... This will probably be the best solution for this issue. So this is how this starts. Okay. Lifting a fingerprint or two from a crystal doorknob, the man paused, lit his pipe, and began wondering, is the black heart of crime the lack of regretting? Disguised as Sherlock Holmes, he spied on the party. At the masquerade ball, the dancers were forgetting that their host was none other than the Dr. Moriarty. So, that's about as far as I've gotten, but I just, this is where I think I'm hung up now, is that I describe, perhaps for the love of alliteration, I describe Moriarty as that Prospero of poisonous plots.
Yes.
Unrepentantly obscene.
Well, pragmatic. I don't know if they were obscene. Maybe they were.
Well, I don't know. In this case, though, what I have to rhyme the word keyhole with something. So, in the next stanza, the rhyme
about
word
for B-O?
Is vitriol.
Oh, vitriol. Okay.
Yes. So, the dancers had been bathed in blue sulfuric vitriol. So, I don't know. I mean, I think I'm kind of confounding the Shakespearean Prospero with the Edgar Poe Prince Prospero.
Right, from The Mask of the Red Death.
Yes, because I'm going to describe the scene where Moriarty has duped these young ravers into a massacre where they've been bathed in blue sulfuric vitriol.
Sounds like fun.
Well, I suppose it is, because their epidermis is now exposed, and but I have my choice. I could either use the word orgiastic, or I could use the word keyhole for the rhyme word in this is a sonnet composed of one quatrain and two quintrains, you know. So the what would be, I'm not sure, ABCD. Yeah, I don't know. It's like the fourth rhyme in the poem should either be keyhole or orgiastic. But if I don't use keyhole, then I don't have to use vitriol. And I don't know what else rhymes with keyhole.
Needle?
What?
Needle?
Well, that doesn't rhyme with keyhole. I mean, peehole rhymes with keyhole.
Keyhole, yes.
Yeah, but that's rather vulgar.
Needle doesn't.
Needle? Like a needle in a haystack?
Yes, needle and thread.
It almost rhymes with keyhole, but not really. I mean, not like dead on the nose rhymes. But vitriol is differently accented than keyhole. Uh-huh. So it also doesn't quite land squarely. You know, not much fits in the keyhole. I mean, that's why.
True enough.
Yeah. So, any rate, yeah, that's, I'm working on the Sherlock Holmes poem.
And that sounds like an interesting one.
Well, I mean, I think that I want it to work through the question that's stated at the beginning. Is the black heart of crime, is the black heart of crime the lack of regretting? As though maybe, you know, the real evil is not the transgression itself, but
the indifference to the effect that it has on others.
Yes, that's right, and the remorselessness. I mean, as I recall, John Wayne Gacy's last words were "Kiss my ass."
Yeah, well, that's a Luciferian defiance for you.
Yeah, well, it doesn't seem he was expressing much remorse, does it?
Was no.
It? So, but I want Moriarty's argument to be that even if something is evil, it can be beautiful.
Yes.
Right. So
the fleurs du mal.
The fleurs du mal. So I want to describe this eviscerated dance scene, a kind of, you know, Prince Prospero-like masquerade as a a scene of beauty, and then there's this kind of almost like a stalemate between the force of good, which is Holmes, and the force of evil, which is
Margaret. Well, what harm does it do for these people to celebrate and perform?
Well, their skins are removed by sulfuric acid. That's not exactly so.
All right, yeah, that's not good. I didn't realize that was
I looked up vitriol a little bit, and there were... Vitriol is an old term for sulfuric acid.
A strong acid, yes.
Yeah, right. Yeah, and typically referring to sulfuric acid.
Mm-hmm.
There used to be different colored grades, so if you were to go to a chemist or something in the olden days, you might get a red or a blue or other colored vitriol as a... And these referred to, I think, different strengths or properties of the sulfuric acid in question. And since there are, I think, variations of sulfuric acid, it's not just, you know, one thing. But that's more the territory of a Professor Moriarty to know, and of Sherlock Holmes. Sherlock Holmes also had quite a knowledge of chemistry.
Yes.
Yeah, and so surely Sherlock Holmes knew the distinctions between the different hues of sulfuric acid and how criminals might use these acids for evil, or how such acids might benefit his investigations. So, what are we talking about now? We were
speaking of the poem of Sherlock Holmes.
Well, you know, Noel Coward wrote a wonderful poem about Bali.
Mm-hmm.
When he was traveling in Bali with Charlie Chaplin.
Huh.
In, I think, 1937. And... I unfortunately do not have this poem by heart. I just don't have that mnemonic gift that you have. But I can remember like the first two lines or so, which goes something like, "As I was saying to Charlie, there's far too much dancing in Bali."
To Charlie.
To Charlie. That's a great rhyme.
There's far too much dancing in Bali. Yeah.
Every Balinese native, from the tomb to the womb, is creative. And so they are, truly creative people. Now, can you put some more sound effects on? I think that it's, you know, we need more sound effects.
Sound effects?
Yeah, I see you have a stack of CDs there that are labeled sound effects.
Yeah.
They're in a box. You have an entire box of sound effects. I'd like to hear some.
I use them for various
Yeah, I'd like
things.
To hear some joy buzzers and...
Let's see what
you know, springs popping, trains hooting... Ghosts rattling their chains. I love that haunted house record that Walt Disney
well,
put out.
Well, I don't have that one. That was actually made into a movie, too.
It was made into a movie, but why?
With Eddie Murphy. Well, because they had these properties that they owned, and they made the Pirates of the Caribbean movie, which made a fortune for them. They made
indeed it did. They not only made a fortune, but it made an empire. The Empire of the Caribbean. I mean, if it wasn't for that movie, Disney would not own the Caribbean islands.
They own them, you say?
They have, indeed.
How is that? Did they come into ownership of?
Well, they conquered all the different countries: Cuba, Haiti,
Disney,
Dominican Republic. Yes, the Mickey Mouse and his Mouseketeers, should I say? They came charging into the Caribbean, a vast armada of cartoon characters, and they deposed the various banana republics and their whimsical leaders, or not so whimsical leaders.
The former haunts of pirates.
Former Hansa Pirates, right. Captain Morgan.
Yes.
Yeah, Captain Morgan came out from his... Well, did he die in a watery grave? How did Captain Morgan
die? I think he may have died comfortably as the governor of Jamaica, having been knighted by Charles II.
He was a privateer, not a pirate.
Yes, he was. Yeah. Well, he had to flee as a young man because Cromwell's roundheads were hunting him, and he was, he was a pirate, but a lot of the pirates...
Pirate is sort of the blanket term. I mean, a privateer had a commission for...
They were operating under letters of marque and were a representative of the crown in their own way if they were harassing the Spanish possessions and so on.
It's a patriotic duty.
Yes, and then Morgan had performed an incredible feat of crossing the Isthmus of Panama with his men to capture Panama City, and that was a military victory.
I see. Well, so now buccaneers, though, were more rugged ruffians.
They used a boucan pit, which is where you dig a pit and you cook meat in it.
Which is what they do in Papua New Guinea.
Yes. Of course, the Spaniards would roast humans alive in those pits if they weren't good Catholics.
Ah, yes. Well, that's... for my edification, can you maybe narrate some of the greater atrocities of the Catholic Church, like its greatest hits?
Way too much. I mean...
so not time for this in the show.
60 million individuals, the office of the Holy Inquisition, presided over by Torquemada, would put you to the question.
Torquemada was responsible for the death of 60 million?
Well, the church itself was responsible for it in that they held an inquisition, and then they never did anything themselves. They would turn the victims over to the civil arm, and they would do the burning and torturing and so forth.
Well, I hear somebody being tortured right now thanks to the sound effects.
Wasn't this what you wanted?
Yes, I wanted some sound effects.
Playing the torture sound effect here.
That's right. So the Spanish Inquisition, which reminds me, who is afraid of the Spanish Inquisition?
Everybody. I'm afraid
except
of it
now. Except
for
Monty Python.
Well, they're just joking and goofing, but they were unlikely to be attacked by the Spanish Inquisition, despite their film about...
I just heard the sound of disappointment. That must be a disappointed audience that would like to see John Cleese and who are the others? I forget.
Because
right now.
They mocked the birth of Christ, although they didn't actually, but...
I heard cheering. You said mocked the birth of Christ, and they started cheering.
In their movie, The Life of Brian, which I'm sure you've seen.
Well, that's not a mockery, because...
No, it's actually pretty good.
It's actually one of the more realistic versions of the Christ story that I've ever read.
It shows the Sermon on the Mount is happening, and it's all very noble and beautiful, but as you get farther and farther away, you can't hear it very well, and then they're saying, what do you say, blessed are the cheesemakers? What? They can't hear the words, which was funny, I thought.
So Arthur C. Clarke went on to write 2001, A Space Odyssey, after the script of the film was made, and the film was made, then Clarke wrote the book. I'm sure you're aware of that.
But he was familiar with the story and every aspect of it. He just put it into a readable novel form.
Right. Well, why hasn't that been done with The Life of Brian?
Well, I don't know if there is a demand for it, and it probably is owned by...
Monty Python owns the Solomon Islands, just like Disney owns the Caribbean. And they're going to send out comedic armadas, one against the other. You hear that? That is the salute of the cartoon armadas. Are you taking off the sound effects CD?
No, I am not. The sound effects CD continues to play. I hope you like it.
Well, I do like it. Can you turn it up? Because what we need is louder sound effects. Oh, that's
right
better.
Now, we're hearing the The trumpets on the parade field.
Yeah, that's the, those are the Ogo Ogo trumpets.
The trumpet spake not to that's the right, they had, throng.
Well, they have whole platoons of trumpeteers that march behind the Ogo Ogos. Actually, that's not true. What they have is whole platoons of gong players that march behind the Ogo Ogos.
There's a lot that of, sounds very impressive.
Well, it is impressive. And the musical skills of the young Balinese are admirable.
Great.
Percussive.
A fine, high civilization.
It is a high civilization. And you know, it's a largely a drug-free high. I don't know of Balinese people being particularly fond of intoxicants.
Well, it's a human thing. I'm sure they've got drugs of some kind.
Well, they go into trance, which doesn't really require drugs. It's a hypnotic trance. And that's what I go to Indonesia to study is trance ceremonies. I like to see people in spirit possession states and film them. So that's why I'm going to go over to the makeout room, because all of those people are possessed by Behemoth, by Belphegor, by Beelzebub, by...
Are
can you name
really?
Some other demons, please?
Well, let me see.
Chlamydia.
Just saying the names of demons is something I don't usually do, but let's think of some...
Silophistris. Sinistratus.
Yes. You mentioned Behemoth, and of course Beelzebub, known in Palestine. Dagon, is that a demon? Or?
Yeah, Pazuzu.
Pazuzu, yes, we know of.
Yeah, Samael. We ought to be careful, saying, you know, you're not supposed to say the
exactly.
names of all the demons on the radio.
I generally don't do that.
Yeah, it's just not a good idea. What is this? Well, if I eat this, will it?
It will make you dance and sing and see pretty colors.
Oh no!
No, I mean,
I've sworn off of the. I've sworn off of seeing the pretty colors unless they are produced by the various forms of vitriol.
Well, I just had one, but
I noticed that, and the sound effects started right after you had one.
The thing is, it's gonna be my. Task to put everything away and take off so I can get to the...
Well, you know, what's a great idea is that you chew... What is it, like a now and later?
It's like... It's a starburst. It's like a candy, but it is infused with THC.
Oh, THC. Oh, that is kryptonite to me. That is the one thing that I cannot touch.
What happens if you do?
I become very disagreeable.
Uh-oh.
Yes. And I actually... No, I mean, I don't take drugs or drink. I am completely straight edge to use
What about
the
all that LSD that you take?
I don't take LSD.
Oh, really?
No.
I seem to remember once we met and we were talking about taking LSD and you said, well, actually, I'm taking LSD right now.
Really? What? That must have been the other David Normal, not this one.
Well, whatever.
That was Derek.
Yeah, Derek Normal. That was diethylamide. That was David. That was, what do we call it? Diethylamide Normal. Yeah, that's, you know. Delicid.
Divorced from that individual's activity.
Yeah, I've had a divorce with...
not me.
I've had a divorce with Fantastica. That was what the I think the pharmacologist named Lewis Lewin, I think. Do I have that right, Hal? He had a nomenclature for drugs in the 19th century, of which one of them was Fantastica.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and mescaline, for example, was categorized as Fantastica. The mescaline has a longer history of Western scientific knowledge than the other drugs do. Of course, all of these psychedelics were known to Native Americans, Mesoamericans, and South Americans.
Somewhere.
Yeah, well, I mean, certainly peyote was known for... Peyote became popular, actually. I think it goes back quite a ways with the huichol, but its popularity in North America really came about in the late 19th or early 20th century. It supplanted the kind of mezcal bean that was used in the ghost dances. And the mezcal bean is quite toxic. The peyote created altered states, and it was and is much less toxic.
Do you know anything about sapo?
Yeah, it's a kind of frog thing that is some sort of toxin that comes out of a frog skin.
Stick it in your eye or something.
Yeah, I don't know. I went to
pierce the skin and.
I took it once. It was delivered to me in drops in my eyes and.
Well, at least they didn't stick a knife in there.
I don't know. I didn't really think much of it one way or another.
Right.
I mean, it was an uncomfortable thing to have put in my eyes. But what was more uncomfortable was that it cost like $100 for this privilege.
Oh, that's terrible.
Yeah, it was terrible. I'm still feeling that pain today. You know, it was supposed to be a healing ceremony, but it didn't heal my pocketbook. Anyway, but healing is not free.
You know? I believe you.
Yes, well, you know. So, Hal, speaking of believing things, why don't you do an act of stitchomancy and pick something randomly from that big incunabula of William Blake sitting over there?
All right. I was, let's see, what could it be? How about the mental traveler?
Well, I thought you were going to, stitchomancy means that you pick something randomly.
Where's the book?
The book is randomly at the very edge of the table. Here, I'll grab it.
Okay. Just hand it over. So not anything that I have to memory, but something that I'll just read.
Something at random?
You could if you wanted.
Well,
I had some of the Proverbs of Hell earlier, and from Milton I often recite. So.
A part of the epic poem America.
All right, I've done that one too. On this page, you like
page
me just
315.
To read? All right.
315.
The thing is, I'm going to have to close up shop, but pretty soon.
Oh, why is that?
Because I have to go over to the tattoo parlor and begin the drawing session there.
Oh, that starts at a healthy hour. Underground cartoonist hours.
Takes me time to put all this stuff away so that when they bring me back here several hours later, I can just scoop up the bag and do it. But that being said,
well, I think there's
enough time.
I think you still have enough time to read the entirety of America by William Blake.
No, I do not. It is not. That would take many hours to read the entirety of that poem. But I can start right here on page 313.
Is it 313?
Yes.
Oh. Not 315.
I have 313. That's the page that you opened it to and gave me.
Okay, well then that's the page to start from.
All right. Here goes. Over the hills, the vales, the cities, rage the red flames fierce. The heavens melted from north to south, and Urizen, who sat above all heavens in thunders wrapped, emerged his leprous head from out his holy shrine, his tears in deluge piteous falling into the deep sublime, flagged with gray-browed snows and thunderous visages, his jealous wings waved over the deep, weeping in dismal howling woe, he dark descended, howling around the smitten bands, clothed in tears and trembling, shuddering cold. His stored snows he poured forth, and his icy magazines he opened on the deep, and on the Atlantic sea, white, shivering, leprous his limbs all over white, and hoary was his visage, weeping in dismal howlings before the stern Americans, hiding the demon red with clouds and cold mists from the earth, till angels and weak men 12 years should govern o'er the strong, and then their end should come when France received the demon's light. Stiff shudderings shook the heavenly thrones. France, Spain, and Italy in terror viewed the hands of Albion and the ancient guardians, fainting upon the elements, smitten with their own plagues. They slow advanced to shut the five gates of their law-built heaven, filled with blasting fancies and with mildews of despair, with fierce disease and lust, unable to stem the fires of Orc. But the five gates were consumed, and their bolts and hinges melted, and the fierce flames burnt round the heavens and round the abodes of men. Mm-mm. That is the end of the poem.
Is that the very end?
The very end of the poem, America.
So I actually chose like the last few lines of the poem for you to read.
Yes.
The climactic ending with this fiery conflagration of heaven and earth, France, Spain, and England, too.
Let me go a bit farther here.
Go a bit farther in what direction?
To speak of Urizen and Los, and in particular the wine press of Los, called War on Earth.
Are you going to cue up some more sound effects for that?
Well, I wasn't thinking of it, but here's some.
Is that the sound of a wine press?
No, this is not. That's more like a pants presser, actually, but not what I was planning. So, I don't know. I was going to comment, but without this going on. And you may see, I'm engaged in putting my stuff away.
Are you?
Well, I need to.
Well, I hear the sound of the motorcycle revving up. That must be your motorcycle
getting
taxi.
Ready to drive away.
Yeah, well, they're waiting for you out there, revving their engines.
I just need to walk to the tattoo parlor.
Not walk. You don't walk to a tattoo parlor.
I do.
You motorbike in on a huge Harley Davidson.
That would be disruptive. You know, sometimes you do get a rowdy scene there with drunks coming in and, you know, not knowing what they want. But they are very patient with
them. They end up with Betty Boop tattoos. That's what happens.
I don't think so.
What's wrong with a Betty Boop tattoo?
Nothing, but that's not the sort of thing people ask for in the mission.
Why is that?
Not into Betty Boop, I suppose.
What's not to be into? What's not to like about Betty Boop?
I like her a lot.
Yeah, she's quite cute.
And I recently saw the first Popeye cartoon in which she figures.
Oh, is that right? This Popeye was a Fleischer Studios, Fleischer Brothers production originally.
Popeye came from cartoonist E.C. Segar and his strip Thimble Theater, which had a number of people before Popeye made his appearance. But Popeye became well-known in Thimble Theater. And the Fleischers did make the wonderful Popeye cartoons, but the problem was they didn't own the character.
Well,
so, like everything else, they ultimately lost control of it. In the first cartoon, there is a carnival taking place in the land of Fleischer cartoons, and all of Betty Boop's animal friends are gathered around, and she is out on a stage of a carnival, and she's wearing a grass skirt and no top and just a flower lei over her breasts as she's dancing. And Popeye is in the audience, and he gets up on the stage and starts dancing with her.
Oh, boy.
It's really nice, and that's a very revealing outfit that she has. When she turns away, you can see the side of her breast and so on. Anyway, she also wears the same outfit in the cartoon Betty Boop's Bamboo Isle. But meanwhile, Bluto in the audience is being obnoxious to Olive Oil, and eventually he grabs her, runs off, and ties her to the railroad tracks, and
it
starts to be a usual Popeye cartoon.
Wait a second. Who ties olive oil to the railroad tracks? Bluto.
Bluto,
right?
Yes.
Well, he's a bully.
Yes, he's an obnoxious bully, and she doesn't want to have anything to do with him.
But he's always got a crush on olive oil.
Well, everybody does in these cartoons, inexplicably.
Well, she never really seemed as attractive to me as Betty Boop.
No, not in any way, but Bluto and Popeye are head over heels for olive oil.
Well, you know, she's a kind of a plain girl, but behind that plain facade, there's something...
She's got immense feet and, you know, hardly any kind of a figure, but I shouldn't be making such comments.
Yeah, well, she's probably one of these kind of, like, psychology grad student types that has no inhibitions, really.
Actually, she is the soul of bourgeois propriety.
Oh, she is. But
and
that
sometimes
is facade.
I
think that she is just absolutely perverted. She's polymorphous perverse, to use
she
a Freudian
does seem
expression.
To be easily wooed by Bluto in you know, when you think of what they've all been through, she should hew to Popeye more than Bluto. But then also she's watching Sweepy all the time.
Oh,
who
is, yeah, Sweepy.
Who was added into it.
Well, this is very old memory banks I'm having to dig into, because I watched these cartoons, which were old hat, old reruns when I was growing up, when I was a kid in the 1970s.
And they're marvelous, and they're making a big return.
Oh, are they? I didn't like the Robin Williams film very much.
The music was not right.
Everything about it was not right.
Well, Shelley Duvall was a great olive oil.
I suppose.
And Robin Williams did a pretty good job as Popeye.
I guess.
But the Harry Nilsson music is too laid back for the frenetic pace and energy of a Popeye
Raymond
cartoon.
Raymond Scott for the Popeye music.
Or Sammy Timberg, the guy who worked for Fleischer, and did the songs. Have you ever seen Popeye Meets Sinbad?
You know, that does ring a bell. I think I have.
That is a Fleischer color classic, a 20-minute long cartoon where Popeye visits the Isle of Sinbad and has to rescue Olive from a giant rock and from all sorts of things, a two-headed giant.
Like a rock as in a giant eagle type.
A huge bird.
Creature. Like
yes.
Or like a Garuda, to go
right
back to the Indonesian.
The giant bird that nests on the peaks of Colossus.
Hey, you know, you didn't finish naming all the demons. Can that would be a great way to round out the show, make everybody uncomfortable.
Well, it makes me uncomfortable. All the demons, also the princes of hell, all those characters, there are a lot of them. You mentioned some of the more spectacular ones.
Well, there's
Fagor,
Asmodeus, of course.
Asmodeus, Behemoth, and so forth. And I had just mentioned Dagon when...
What about Demogorgon?
Demogorgon is another one, yes, certainly.
Yeah. Belial.
I've always pronounced it Belial, but I don't know whether that is correct or not. But yes.
Right. Yeah.
Well, I can't find one of my sleeves, but I may just have to pack the bag without it.
What are you doing? You're packing up to go.
I have to, yes.
Oh.
Because otherwise...
Why don't you name all the underground cartoonists? That could be just as terrifying as naming all the demons, right?
Do I know all of them?
I can
name a number of them. One name that is omitted from their ranks is me. They left
That's
me out of the Portraits of the Underground Cartoonists book that Drew Friedman did. This was a terrible blow to me. I felt
my
work was useless. But then Phoebe Gluckner introduced me to these young underground cartoonists who are familiar with my work, who I'm happy to work with and will go and work with now.
Well, you know, that's right. The young people, they know what's up.
Well, maybe. Sometimes
they
do.
Yeah, they often do. It's to be hoped. I'm an optimist. And
I'm actually going to do my outro, because I can continue tidying up while I'm
Okay.
So don't worry about it.
Are you going to play the overture of William Tell? Is that what you play at the end for your outro?
No, sir, it's not.
Perhaps you'll recall some.
You're going to play Henry Purcell.
No, I love Purcell, and I may do that someday.
Well,
Purcell is
elegant music.
I really like it.
Yeah. Well, why don't
you? I think I put something away wrong here.
How about you play some John Dowland?
I do this in a certain way, and I'm going to do it this way.
Okay.
Because this is the way the show ends.
Yeah, but
if I,